Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and God owns it all, especially my cattle and dryer lint. He can have it. Today, we're talking about our role as stewards with what God has entrusted us. But before we redecorate someone else's home and throw a rager, now that Mamone is calling the shots in their lives, let's welcome in our favorite house sitters, Marin and Barry. Good day, guys.
Good day.
Sounds like there was a lot to dig into there. I was really good.
Loud?
You were, the Marin and Barry part was just, you took it up a notch. It's louder than normal.
All right. Do I need to turn your headphones down?
No, you're fine.
Okay. Yeah, guys. What's up?
I was saying this earlier, like, what am I going to talk about? You guys literally went to like hurricane ravaged North Carolina
back.
I like nixtamalized my corn.
Wait, that's huge. You nixtamalized your corn?
I nixtamalized my
corn. Where did you get lye? You just went and bought some lye?
calcium hydroxide.
Well,
I got it at the Mexican grocery store.
Yeah, you did.
And when I went in, one of our grace attenders from our Latino community was like, "Oh, Pastor." It was awesome.
That's amazing.
That's where I got it. And yeah.
And you're making some corn tortillas?
Tonight, I'm going to try them out.
Let's go. Do you have a tortilla press?
Yes, I got one of those as well. I am guessing that they're going to not work because I think it's an art. Well, yeah, I think it's an art. And
oh, are you not using lard?
No.
Oh yeah.
Good luck. I'm doing them like Guatemalan style, just like it'll be great. It'll be great. I promise. But I don't know that it's going to all hold together right, because I don't think I nixtamalized them appropriately. Uh-huh. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly. Yeah, I was about to say.
I don't know how you make a tortilla without lard. That's just me though. I'm not Guatemalan.
Marin, I've got a question for you because I was making comments about this before you walked in. I know people have like different opinions on like tortilla chips.
People broadly or just me?
People have
opinions.
Yeah, it's like
on chips.
Yeah,
tortilla chips in particular.
It's like I don't like Chili's tortilla chips or something. I do like someone else's tortilla chips.
El Milagro.
Is that does that apply to tortillas? Because I can't honestly say that I've ever been like, that's a really good tortilla versus.
Have I taught you nothing? I literally brought you tortillas on this show.
But they taste good.
Barry just said the name of the tortilla. There is but one.
But I mean, it tastes good, but it tastes like a corn tortilla to me. It's just corn tortilla.
Oh my goodness. Wow. I've taught you nothing.
I need a corn tortilla like challenge or something.
When I dial in the recipe, I'll get it right. And right. I'll give you some hot tortillas right off the stove.
I guess it just kind of all feels the same. I know a good tortilla chip, like you can't beat Tostitos scoops.
There's El Milagro corn, if corn is your thing, which it should be.
Yeah.
There's El Milagro, or there's glue.
Glue.
There's no in between. There's a tortilla, and then there's glue.
That's wow.
No in
That's,
between paste.
Okay. Well, yeah. Like when I go to a Mexican restaurant or something, I'm like, I'll have mm-hmm. a corn tortilla. They all taste exactly the
same.
Because
every restaurant is using El Milagro, I promise.
Okay.
They're all the good ones, they are using El Milagro. Okay. I promise. Paco's Tacos?
Yeah.
El Milagro.
Really?
Most likely mine are going to taste worse. But but they started with me putting little seeds in the ground, and that's
impressive.
Pretty cool.
That's
pretty
impressive.
Cool. So,
yeah.
So that's what I did. What
table.
About you guys? What have you been up to?
Yeah, Marin, what's new with you? What's going on?
Goodness gracious.
You got your North Carolina shirt on.
I do. I have my North Carolina shirt on. My two sisters live in Western North Carolina. They live in a little mountain town called Spruce Pine, North Carolina, home of the perfect Christmas tree. And they've been down there for, I want to say about one sister's been down there for about a decade. Her husband is the lead pastor of a church called The Bridge down there in Spruce Pine. And they were just hit terribly by the hurricane that came through, Hurricane Helene. Wiped out their downtown area.
Yeah, you sent us a picture of the water level there. How high did it get?
It was up to the roofs of the businesses that were on the lower level of their downtown. Really,
wild.
Probably the more, there's a lot of images I won't get out of my head, but there was a giant bridge, a giant footbridge that crossed the river. Mm. I mean, way above the water, like big enough for boats to pass under it. Just huge. That whole bridge was just taken out.
Yeah, it's gone.
Wow. Knowing what that river rose to, just the levels, just thinkable, unthinkable. And that's just one community.
Sure.
We passed through Burnsville on our way into Spruce Pine. We drove through Unicoi on our way to Spruce Pine and on our way out of Spruce Pine. And everywhere you look, there's just cars turned over, and not just turned over, like mangled. And then you think about the force of the water and what that did to everything in its path. We saw homes that had just slid off of their foundation.
Yeah.
There's just this concrete slab left where there used to be a house.
Yeah.
And now this house is crashed into its next door neighbor, just floating down the river. I'm sure a lot of the listeners have seen images.
Like Hurricane Katrina and stuff. That's what it sounds like. But that's like the ocean. And so what's so shocking is that this is up in the hills.
Right. And so then you've got elements like mudslides and things like that with the elevation. And yeah, it was just outrageous. So last weekend, I had no way of knowing whether my sisters were even alive, and just held my breath until I finally got a phone call later Saturday, late afternoon, my brother-in-law just letting me know that everybody was okay. So at least I could breathe. But then the second wave of, well, do they have enough food? And are the kids okay? And I know they have no power. I know they have no water. They have no cell service, no internet. My brother-in-law was able to reach me because he had driven quite a distance to find cell service just to let us know that they were okay. And so that the communication has been impossible most days. It's just been impossible to even communicate with them. But I heard that my sister's brother-in-law, who lived in Johnson City, found a path that was open from Johnson City, Tennessee to Spruce Pine. And as soon as I heard that there was a way to get to them, I was gone.
I was
just in my mind already gone. I was going. And I think we were talking about it at one of our pastoral meetings, and I was just filling you guys in. And then Marcus immediately started springing into action, as Marcus is known to do. And next thing I knew, he had a whole group of volunteers and staff, staff members who wanted to volunteer their time to go and deliver 14, I believe, pallets worth of food, hygiene kits, and water filters, to Spruce Pine in particular. And you were among them.
Yeah, I went too. I got to go too. It's weird because it's like, there's a path to Spruce Pine. It's open. Roads are closed. It's one thing to be like, roads are closed and they got to like clear off the trees that are in the middle of the road.
But it's now it's like roads are gone.
Yeah. It's like, I saw like we were, I don't know what road we were on, but we were on the road to Spruce Pine, and you look over and you look up and there's another road coming this way, but it's just, it's just gone. It like stops because the rest of the road just fell into a cliff somewhere. It just And so it's one thing to be like, it'll probably take like a month to clear these roads and they'll be open again. It's another thing. Like, I have no idea what they're going to do with all these closed roads. Like people have to,
it's like a massive engineering project.
It's insane. And at one point Maren was, I don't know if you were joking. You probably, you'll probably say you weren't joking, but I hope you were joking when you were like, how much does it cost to charter a helicopter?
Oh, I was not joking.
Because
no,
there's, I don't know if you saw all of the helicopters in the area, but there's a bunch just like dropping supplies.
When, when there were just signs, and this is again, all just through the news media and social media and people posting pictures, signs all over saying, do not drive in Western North Carolina. Like, all roads are closed. Just don't drive. That's when I was thinking, well, if my sisters and if their community needs supplies, how much does it cost to charter a helicopter?
Yeah. Like, oh, I thought you were like, how much does it cost for a helicopter to drop me off?
Oh, no, no, no.
I was like, they probably want to drop off supplies.
It would have been to
bungee down.
It would have been to bring supplies into the community and extract my family.
Right.
Not, not having any way of knowing from them what their living conditions were like. Now, they fared really well by comparison to many. There are many in their church community who lost their entire homes, lost their livelihoods, businesses were underwater. And so all things considered, my two sisters fared quite well. But one sister got 18 inches of water in her basement, which now I don't know, you know, if that creates foundation issues or if this is going to be a longer term issue. But we spent the night there after you guys left. You guys were there from Friday to Saturday. We stayed till Sunday morning. We slept at Maria's house, And as soon as you walked in, the smell of mold just smacked you in the face.
Yeah.
And so now I'm concerned about their breathing quality and is it even safe for them to be sleeping there? And their two youngest kids came home with me. So I took home four kids. I took home 2 6-year-olds and 2 3-year-olds. Each sister sent me home with just their youngest. Their oldest decided to stay back and kind of help with the relief effort. But hopefully I'm helping my sisters by getting their wild little ones out of the way and really keeping them safe. The emergency response was more than I had even imagined. I mean, the Mennonites came out in force. Amazingly, there's no connection between my sister's church and this group of Mennonite servants, really, who came to literally fish people out of the water, make food for everybody. Just their emergency response is so sophisticated. Wow. They brought a semi truck. How'd they get that semi truck?
I was wondering where that came from.
Yeah, that's the Mennonite semi truck that is a refrigerator. And so they're just making meals for armies of people every day, 3 hot meals a day.
Yeah.
Just like that. They were there before we were there. Right. So imagine what the roads were like when they were coming there with their equipment. And then there was a group of Amish people who were camping on the church grounds, also providing assistance to my sister's church, to the community at large, other churches in the area.
Yeah.
When we were there on Saturday, it just seemed like everyone from everywhere was coming in with their supplies. And it was overwhelming to see. I asked my sister and her husband, who's the pastor there, Ryan is his name. I said, how many of these folks are church congregants? How many of these folks, you know, who are these people? And he just said, I don't know. I don't know. There was a whole convoy of, I want to say, like, they were cool looking Jeeps. Like, these weren't your normal Jeep. They had very large
mountain Jeeps.
They were mountain Jeeps. They had huge tires. And they were just like, each one of them had like, they looked like they were Jaden's age, like a college kid was just driving. And I didn't know who they were. And they came up and said, hey, we're just here to help deliver some food, or what do you need us to do? It was just a random group of young people that drove up from Greenville, South Carolina.
Wow.
Because Spruce Pine was one of the hardest hit areas and they just wanted to come and be of service. So Saturday was just crazy. It was just a hub of people dropping off supplies. And my sister's sanctuary is now a care center. And that's one of the problems. Obviously the sanctuary is where church services are held. It's not a large building. They don't have, a freestanding structure or anything. They don't have room within their church to store all this stuff. So for the time being, it's just, they're trying to organize it as best they can into little piles all around the sanctuary. But you can imagine how overwhelming that would be. One day you're having church, the next day your whole church is turned into, like, you know, ground zero for the relief effort.
A
couple things on that. So, I was talking, Eric is his name? I was talking to Eric, who is one of the pastors there.
My brother-in-law.
He was talking about, you know, this is one thing. The triage and relief that's coming in is one thing. But it's going to get really bad in a couple of weeks, because all these roads that you're not able to go to, they go to businesses somewhere.
Sure.
And those businesses are going to close.
Right.
And people are going to lose their jobs. And there's just going to be a whole new influx of relief that's needed into these communities.
But that's exactly when everybody moves their attention off of the area.
And so, I don't know. I mean, it felt good to be present in the triage moment, where it's like you're seeing people, providing relief and getting their needs met, their immediate needs. But knowing what's ahead for some of these people, you're just like, man, I don't know. Like, they don't have running water still. Yeah. I don't know when that will happen.
No.
They don't have
6 months is the earliest estimate that we have heard for when the town of Spruce Pine will have running water again.
Yeah. And I think and the other thing I was going to say is I don't know if other the reason we, one of the reasons we did this as a church, sent people down there, is because of Marin's connection, because we have a connection with the church. Usually when natural disasters happen, if we can make a connection with another location, we try to do something in the form of sending relief, sending care.
Because we want to do it in partnership, not just...
We don't want to just like...
Anonymously, just
send
drop it
to
off.
Red Cross or something. But we try to make a connection with the church, no matter where that happens to be. So that's one of the reasons we did this. Another reason is because we have the resources to do, God has blessed us with the resources to do this.
The infrastructure.
Kind of thing. Yeah, because we have a care center. We have generous people who have given to the care center. And if you were in service, you saw this past weekend, you saw Marin's video. One of the coolest anecdotes of this from Grace's perspective is we brought all these water filters donated by Filter of Hope. So these water filters are basically designed to take the dirtiest of water and make it drinkable and clean. And so the church that the bridge is right off of a river. And jury's still out whether people want to drink from that river.
No. The jury is very much in. The answer is no. The river will kill you. You cannot drink from the river unless.
So we bring this filter in and we start showing people how it's possible to have clean water. And that's only possible because of our relationship with Filter of Hope.
Yes. Right.
And part of our relationship with Filter of Hope this year included, they were a partner of Grace Kids Camp,
right?
Where kids were bringing money all week to support Filter of Hope.
Right.
And through that support, Filter of Hope bought more water filters. And it just so happened that those are the water filters that we were able to bring to the bridge to give to this community to have clean water for the foreseeable future when they don't know when their water is going to be running again.
Right.
I can't say enough about Filter of Hope. There was never a world where I imagined my sisters or their children would require a Filter of Hope.
Sure.
That's for third world countries, right?
That's right.
War zones, right? That's for underdeveloped nations that have no access to clean water. That doesn't in any way describe my sisters.
Right.
I never dreamed of a world where they would be the recipient of this kind of of help, of love, that this thing that they so desperately need and long term. And so I know my brother-in-law, Eric, he was over the moon about these filters. Just to give you a glimpse of what this community is facing and communities all over. It's not, obviously, it is not just Spruce Pine. But, you know, you can't flush a toilet without filling the tank or the basin with water. Obviously, you need water to wash your kids up, wash the dishes. So at least for the sake of, or for, in the case of my sister, there's a friend of theirs that has like a natural mountain spring. And so both brother-in-laws go every night and fill up those, you know, those giant Costco bins that are like black with the yellow lid.
Yeah.
They fill up giant bins of water and haul them back to the church and haul them back to their homes.
Wow.
And that's kind of like their utility water. Mm-hmm. Now they can't drink it without boiling it, but with a filter,
right, they can,
they don't have to boil it. With a filter, they could go down to the river like we did and just get a bucket full of water and filter this muddy debris laden water. And it just comes out crystal clear and tastes awesome. So they just
it's incredible.
They were beside themselves about that filter. They started telling everybody who came for food about these filters.
Yeah.
And so one thing you got to realize about the mountain community, when you're helping Spruce Pine, you're really helping the broader region, specifically Mount Mitchell itself. People come to this church from different little hollers all over the place, and somebody is going to know somebody who doesn't have access to clean water. And so they're the supplies are being spread far and wide out from where we dropped them off in Spruce Pine. So thank you. Huge, huge thank you to Filter of Hope.
Yeah.
From what I understand, they do something like, I'm going to get this wrong, but something like 200 some gallons of water a day, and they last for 10 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah, each filter, I think we did the math and it's like the filters that we brought are going to clean like 32,000 gallons of water or something like that.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Two things to add that are kind of funny. One is Felicia, Marin's sister, was there for most of the day that we were there Saturday. And I was talking to her and I was like, are you getting much sleep? Are you able to at least find some kind of rest, like at all? And she said, you know, I'm not sleeping that well. I wake up super early. And I was like, oh, that's probably because of stress. And she's like, yeah, I'm not usually a stressed person. She's not. She's like, what's this new feeling, stress?
Yeah, no, she is absolutely the opposite of a stressed person.
And you probably know more details to this, Marin, but so this church is now becoming like a hub
right.
for the community where people can come and get food. So there's tons of like shelf-stable food in the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. So I guess some people went around to tell people that, and the next-door neighbors were told. And they were like, no, we're good. We are making our own squirrels. Like they're
Yeah.
There are probably a lot of people. Oh, I think we said this last week. Like a lot of people in that community, they're like, we've been waiting my whole life for this. I got my shelter. I got my 22.
It's where I thrive.
Right. Yeah. Well, and they are built different. Uh-huh. They aren't waiting for, you know, the cavalry to come in and clear their roads. They're getting their own chainsaws and, you know, communities are rallying to literally dig one another out of the mud. Mm-hmm. They're just springing into action because they have to.
So we're gonna
keep looking for opportunities to serve that community or others that we make connections with. So if you're interested in helping to provide relief, you can go to gracechurch.us/hurricane and there's a way to give money to help any relief efforts through Grace Church. So thank you to the organizations that helped provide funds for this trip. If there are other opportunities in the future, we will definitely take that opportunity to do that. So gracechurch.us/hurricane to help provide relief. All right, let's talk about money.
All right.
So we're gonna switch gears here, and we've started a new sermon series, and that is called Making Change.
Yep.
And it's focused on kind of getting healthy financially for individuals and families. And Barry, before we get into the specifics of week one's sermon, can you kind of tell us why we decided to do a sermon series like this and why right now?
Yeah, a few reasons. I think the biggest reason is, like, as pastors, one of the things we hear over and over and over again is the stress and the difficulty that comes from people and their relationship with money in our church, whether that's people experiencing poverty, people completely stuck in debt, people who have lots of money but don't feel like they're using it well. And it's just, we come across people, money is like the issue for most people living in our society. And one of the things that, you know, we've dabbled in the past, but we've never really done we've never been super intentional with, is trying to help people have a healthier relationship with their money. Not just so it's like, so they'll give more to the church, but just because having the freedom, the abundance that comes with a healthy relationship with money, like that's a part of discipleship in our mind and in our way of looking at it. And so it is our responsibility to help guide people in that. So that's a key thing. The other reason that we're doing it is because the Bible talks a lot about money. Like there's so much wisdom in scripture about money, and it's just time for us to revisit some of those passages and talk about what is the Bible calling us to do?
Yeah.
So this is part of just the tip of the spear of sort of a whole new range of initiatives that we're doing. My dad is actually spearheading this sort of financial wisdom approach for Grace Church in partnership with the Ron Blue Institute. And so that's where we're doing those workshops and the 6-week God Owns It All Bible study. And we're going to do peer-to-peer financial coaching soon. And so all of this stuff is a part of us trying to help Grace Church, the people of Grace Church, have a healthy relationship with their money based on biblical principles.
Yeah.
So week one just wrapped up.
Yeah.
And what would you say the big idea of your first sermon or message was?
Yeah. So each week there's kind of these four key ideas that we're looking at, and each week we're looking at one of them. And so in week one, the first idea that we're talking about is just the idea of stewardship. And I know that stewardship in some circles may feel like a bit of an overused word, but it's the right word to describe what we're talking about, which is how the Bible envisions a healthy relationship to money, just in general, like what is money to us? And so I kind of walked through some kind of fundamental ideas in the sermon. One, God owns it all. And so that's a very biblical idea that God is the creator of everything. And according to scripture, that then means that God owns it all. It's his, that's his creation. It's ultimately his, which means that if we then have things, money, wealth, cattle, homes, like ultimately it's not actually ours. It's God's. If he owns it all, then it's his, which makes us caretakers or stewards of that stuff. We are watching it for God. I use an analogy of like house sitting. It's
brilliant.
Like, thanks.
That was a brilliant analogy.
Oh, thank you. It made sense in my head. And so I shared it, but it's like, we are watching over someone else's property, even as we enjoy the benefits of being those caretakers. So yeah. We can talk about all that, but that's part of the idea. And then with that, we looked at one specific passage where Jesus kind of gives his take on this concept, and he introduces the idea of, okay, there's stewardship. You can serve God with the things that you have, or you can be a slave to mammon. And we can talk about that, but he doesn't make it sound like you can be a good steward or a bad steward. He's like saying you can be a steward or a slave.
Yeah.
Those are your choices. And he just really kind of throws down the gauntlet about our relationship to money. And so I know that's not really like a big idea, but if I had to boil it all down to a big idea, it would be that scriptural wisdom would lead us to see ourselves as stewards of God's money, not owners of our own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is going to be a really interesting series because it's easy for me to forget that my relationship with my money is a spiritual issue.
Right.
Yeah. People compartmentalize it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I know that obviously, I mean, you started the sermon with, what'd you call a margin meter?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a Ron Blue thing. Yeah.
And from what we've seen and experienced just through working here at a church, it's like, there are countless reasons why someone may not have margin, financial margin in their life. Everything from poor decision making to things out of their control, like medical debt or other things that affect them. And so I think one of the biggest questions that I hope this series answers is how do we feel the church ought to be threading the needle between an issue that is both a spiritual and cultural issue?
Mm-hmm.
Because you talked about some of the reasons why I forget all the categories of the margin meter, but why somebody may feel like I need to go into debt to try to look a certain way or like look successful or something, or you're just impacted severely by debt or whatever. So it's a cultural issue. Like we're all in a culture that says consumption and have more and this is yours and you deserve it and all these things, but it's also a spiritual issue.
Right.
And so it'll be really interesting to see how we think we ought to be threading the needle like as Christians and handling that.
Well, and I will admit that this is a soapbox of mine, so I won't stay on it very long, but part of our deficit as Western Americans is that we think of religion as a separate sphere of life. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've got money, I've got my job, I've got my family, I've got my religion. But like to the ancient authors and probably to human beings in general, religion is not some separate sphere. That is like a later invention. It is actually integrated to every part of our life, our faith, our spirituality. You can't divorce that from the practical things of our day-to-day life. And so it's just our bias as Westerners that we would even try to do that. To the biblical authors, everything is spiritual. Money is spiritual. Our relationship to our houses is spiritual. Like all of it is connected to our soul. And that's part of what Jesus is getting at in that passage.
Yeah. I don't think it's wrong to camp out on that soapbox for as long as we can because it's just so unfamiliar to most of us.
Right.
I'm thinking about my brother right now. He's a machinist. He's a blue collar guy, but through his church, he kind of learned to reframe his relationship to his money. Mm-hmm. And he started saving and he started just tithing and he started killing it. And I'm thinking of him because he was just able to just donate $2,000 to my sisters out of nowhere. And I'm telling you, like I've talked about my brother before, it's the most astonishing, miraculous thing that he's walking with the Lord at all, let alone that he's able to respond in that way and bless my sisters so greatly. Mm-hmm. But it's because he started learning this stuff through his church in Illinois about, wait a minute, this is part of my spiritual life. This does all go together. And now in terms of his margin meter, I mean, he had enough to be able to help support my sisters in their time of need. So yeah, I don't think that it's wrong at all to firmly plant ourselves on that soapbox, because it's something that would only enrich us and bless those around us if we could really get a grasp that God owns it all.
Right. And I tried to get there at the end, but like, I want to make really clear that the picture that scripture paints is that if we have a right relationship with money, a healthy, wise, godly relationship with money, the outcome at the end of the day is abundance and freedom and joy. It's good things. Yeah. It's not hardship. It's not poverty. It's like, but it requires a willingness to let our imagination be reframed, allow the wisdom of scripture to speak into our lives for us to get to that point.
Absolutely.
And so that's what the series is all about. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, I think there's a lot to be said about the need to talk as Christians about how important it is to focus our attention on contentment.
Yeah.
Because I remember years ago, Dave Rodriguez preached a sermon somewhat about in this universe with money and how to handle it. And the topic of the sermon was enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget that because of the double meaning of it. Like, it's enough is enough. It's time to stop with the unhealthy relationship, but also allow enough to be enough for you.
Right. Right.
Kind of thing. So, I think it's great that we're dipping our toe into this, and we've got these upcoming workshops that we're offering, through the partnership with Ron Blue. But I wonder how much the heart issues will come up out of this. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to, We do a spiritual assessment every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at some of the results. One of the discipleship practices that we say is a sign that you're a follower of Jesus is material generosity. So one of the questions we ask every year is, do you believe that God owns it all? There's like a question about that. And under the material generosity umbrella, the first statement that people are asked to agree or disagree with is, I believe that everything I am or own comes from and belongs to God. In other words, do you believe God owns it all?
Mm-hmm.
96% of people who responded to that say that they agreed with that.
Okay.
So that's grace people.
Yeah.
So 96%, if you extrapolate that across all of grace, believe to some degree that God owns it all. Okay. And yet roughly 20% of people who responded to that survey say that personal debt is a huge burden for them.
Mm.
So I'm curious how much the heart stuff will get churned up through a series like this, because it's more than just like, I make bad decisions or I'm doing these things. It's like, is your heart content? Are you operating out of fear or greed or what is the stuff that's deeper than just like,
Can I tell you, get
a budget.
It's already coming up in this heart, at least. I don't want to give anything away because I have no idea how my sermon's going to sound because I've written like two words of it. But I'm preaching this upcoming Sunday about contentment. I mentioned earlier, I've got kids from North Carolina that are staying with me right now.
And have you ever preached a sermon with like six kids?
No.
Screaming children in
truly
your house?
Truly, I have not. But I'm getting a lot of the good one-liners, you know? So far, it's been fun already. And one of them that happened right before, they're with my daughter right now, but right before I left to record this podcast, one of them said, Titi, how come you have so much food in your house? I said, I know the answer. It's because I have a scarcity mindset and a heart of fear. I know the answer. But I said, I guess I just like to be prepared, you know? I said, do you have a lot of food at your house? She's like, yeah, but it's not everywhere.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the heart stuff. It's already coming. It's already coming up.
So I'll be curious to see that, because I think that's a... Like I said, it's easy for me to forget the spiritual component of money, especially like I'm probably somebody that needs to go to these workshops. I have no business telling a bunch of people how like to be financially healthy. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I think we're in for a real treat when it comes to conviction about this.
Well, I hope so. I also feel like in some ways I'm glad we have a podcast to talk about some of this stuff. Cause 30 minutes or 35 minutes is not even like close to enough to cover all this stuff. And like, for example, even just as you're talking about the heart stuff, I thought, and you were mentioning debt, and like, it's easy to think, okay, debt is only because of bad decisions, but debt can also be from medical stuff. Yeah. It could be, but like, what about the heart things related to depending on others to care for you? Like, that's part of what it means to be the church.
Right.
Like, how many people, what they need to overcome in their heart is the pride that prevents them from getting the help they need in the midst of their hardship. It's like layers and layers and layers. This is so deeply woven into who we are. Yeah. That,
it's like you said, we're talking to such a broad spectrum of people from so many different walks of life.
Yeah.
My prayer, and I know that He will, is that the Holy Spirit will speak to each individual in each walk of life, because you're right. Some people need to hear, hey, lay your pride down and come and let the church serve you, or
That's why we're
let
here.
People come alongside you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And about the different demographics, if I had written this sermon 15 years ago, I almost guaranteed would have focused almost entirely on upper middle class, wealthy people who, if they have debt, it's consumer debt. But now our demographics as a church have changed so much that I'm having to be preaching, thinking about, there are some people here in poverty. There are some people here deep in medical debt. There are some people here who are stable, but they don't know anything about how to make good choices with their money. Like, and there's some people here who are upper middle class, wealthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're the whole spectrum. It makes it more difficult in some ways, but also kind of forces us to talk about the big ideas like stewardship. Right. So,
yeah. And in the Luke 16 verses that you shared, 16, 10 through 13, it talks about how we cannot serve God and money.
Right.
But at the same passage, it also says that if you're faithful in the little things, God will trust you with the things that really matter.
Right.
And I think for somebody on the more stable side of the margin meter, that sounds right. And that sounds like, all right, challenge accepted. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm faithful in the little things, God's going to trust me with the things that really matter. Challenge accepted. But for somebody who is stricken by debt or struggling to make ends meet or meet basic needs,
right?
How does the principle of like, God will trust you with if you have faith in the little things, God will trust you with the big things, for somebody who's like, I don't even know how to see past this week.
Right.
You know, how does that principle still apply to them?
Right. I mean, my gut reaction to that question is it's not about like, do you have your 30 page plan, master plan for getting to a place of financial stability? It's, are you willing to do what God would desire you to do this week? Like, and what is that? And that's part of, you do have to, that's why the workshops are so valuable. The Bible study is so valuable, because it gives you some of that practical stuff to know, oh, these are some of the action steps that I could be taking.
Yeah.
I could be consolidating my debt. I could be putting a budget together, like those kinds of things. The question is, for me, at least at this stage in the sermon series, it's more about heart posture. It's less about like, are you doing all the right things? You know, are you following Dave Ramsey's points or whatever? It's like, no, is your heart in the right place that you're willing to listen to what God would have you do? So that's not really a complete answer, but it's what's kind of fundamental is you have to have the right posture as you approach these questions, no matter where you are financially.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I would say that is a complete answer. It's like faithfulness can't be about what we have.
Right.
Because then the answer would be, I don't know. I feel like if faithfulness was dependent on what we have, it would be like so inequitable or something. So it's faithfulness is like how we manage what we actually do have.
Right.
And
I mean, and I, when you say that, I'm thinking of like the widow's mite, the widow at the temple who gives her last two coins and Jesus says she's being more faithful, more generous than all these rich guys walking around making a big show of their big, bucket full of cash that they're pouring in. Like it's about the heart. It's not about the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. Faithfulness may be about creating a budget for the first time, or it may be about being generous for the first time, or it may be about just like aligning your heart towards what God thinks is a priority.
Right.
You know, like, and that's going to be different for everybody on the margin meter.
Right.
So then the question is, what are God's priorities? Mm-hmm. What are they? And how, you know, once we understand that, then we can understand how to align our hearts to that.
Sure.
So what are they?
Well, you have to come back for this sermon series to find out. But no, I mean, I think just looking through scripture at the many ways that God talks about money, I think some of the priorities are definitely focused on caring for others. And so generosity is a big part of this. You know, taking the abundance that we are given to care for those who need help. Like there's no getting away from that. Justice and combating injustice is a part of our responsibility with money.
Compassion.
Cause it's what God cares about. He cares about a just world. And so if it's his money, we're going to have to spend it on the things that he cares about. But there is also another element of God cares about us and he cares about our well-being. And I don't believe that God wants us, with maybe a few exceptions for people who have a very unique calling, I don't believe God wants us to be living in squalor, to be suffering. He wants us to have abundance, which means enough. And so that's why when I've talked about like house sitting, I use that analogy of like, God has stocked the pantry for us because he wants us to thrive as we are living abundantly and giving out of overflow and all of that. So it's to me, the fundamental question is, what does God care about? Cause if it's his money, that's what we need to pay attention to.
I love that analogy so much. My son has house sat for you a handful of times. Did he house sit for you once? I think he did once.
I don't remember, but I was going to say,
you still had a dog at the time.
Yeah. He watched Judy.
But I don't know. He has house sat for both you guys and you have stocked the pantry.
We got him honeycomb.
Yeah, you did. Or like you've gotten him more than enough and the kid only ate like a couple of frozen pizzas and then you had all this leftover stuff.
Yeah.
I think if God owns it all, God owns your all. Wherever you're at on that spectrum, God owns it all. Some of you, myself included, maybe there's just never enough in the pantry, you know, and for whatever reason, it might be fear or it might be greed or whatever it is, you just want more and more and more. Some of you are afraid to use anything in the pantry, you know, kind of like the talents that were buried in the ground and God's given you resources and you're just afraid to touch them for whatever reason, or afraid to distribute them for whatever reason. If God owns it all, he owns the widow's mite as much as he owns, you know, the rich folk and the rich rulers. And if he owns it all, he owns it all. I don't know. I think your pantry analogy helped me to see that visually while you were talking about it. And it's such a good picture of what we do with how he has stocked our particular pantry. Maybe there's a lot, maybe there's not a lot, but either way, he's the one who owns it all.
Right.
And we just
Sounds, Maren, like your house is the house to house it. If you got food everywhere.
I need to start.
If you got food everywhere, that's the place to be.
I do have food. I think I have a little mud room off. It's where Maggie used to live. Rip Maggie. But it's turned into like a walk-in pantry. And I think these kids have never seen
anything
like that.
That's not anything to laugh about. But when you say Rip Maggie.
What a sweetheart.
All right. In the same Luke passage, Barry, you said that according to Jesus, our stewardship is connected to the health of our soul.
Yeah.
So to me, the implication is that there's a correlation between poor financial stewardship and spiritual stagnation. Mm. Is that a way to think about it? Or am I thinking too much about that?
I don't want to make it sound like there's a cause and effect. Like if you're bad with your money, then it's going to make you ill spiritually, but I do think there's a connection. There's definitely a correlation because what we do with our resources is a component of discipleship. It's a component of what it means to follow Jesus, to live with surrender, to all that. So I do think there's a correlation there. And I think it would be difficult to find someone who is deeply surrendered to Christ, who is all in and is like so passionate about growing in their relationship with Jesus, but also like careless with their money and never gives anything away generously. Like that to me would be surprising.
Yeah.
Because if you're really following Christ, you're literally letting his teachings shape the way that you live. What are you going to end up doing? You're going to end up living with compassion. You're going to end up being generous. And I would think you're going to end up being wise with the resources you've been entrusted with. So I think there's a correlation there, but I don't have data to back
that up. My brother would
certainly
say so. He would say that he was spiritually stagnant. Even as he was growing in other ways in his walk with Christ, this was that last thing he had to lay down. This money piece was that last thing he had to surrender.
Yeah.
And when he did, it was like rocket fuel for his spiritual growth. Yeah. That is what he would say.
And when I talk about discipleship, to me, I feel like following Jesus, it always is a little bit terrifying to say yes to the Spirit and take that next step, whatever that next step happens to be, whether it's a career or saying yes to going on this short-term trip thing or giving the money away or whatever it is. It's always terrifying. But in my experience, and I bet you guys would say the same, like every time you do say yes, you on the other side of the yes, you find, oh, this is what God had in mind. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's like abundance. There's more than I expected. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. When I was Jaden's age, I was starting to get really excited about like, I don't know, trying out generosity and seeing how far I could push it. And I was an intern at Grace at the time, making like pennies. Like I was not making a lot of money. And something came up that people could give to, and I don't remember what it was, but I was like, I'm just going to give X amount, whatever it was. It was probably like $300, and it felt like an insane amount of money to me. And then I said, I'm going to give it. And then I was like, oh wait, but I don't know how I'm going to pay for groceries this week. But I was like, oh God, I feel like you want me to be generous and to trust you with this. So I'm just going to do it. Cause worst case scenario, I'll just go eat dinner at my parents' house. Like the stakes were very, very low, but I gave the money away. And then literally that day or the next morning, I get a phone call from someone saying, hey, we just had this event at Grace Church and we have about like 14 Tupperwares full of chili. Would you want them? And I was like, yeah, I'll take them. And I had chili for a week. And I'm saying,
See, but there's also a contentment component in that, you know, because some people would be like, what am I going to do with all this chili? What am I going to do with all this manna?
I was
you
thrilled.
Know?
Yeah.
But you were content with what you had and you recognize it as God's provision.
How long do I have to wear this mask?
Right. And so like, every time I tell that story, I have to caveat with like, I don't think it's like a rule that if you give, God gives back more than you could, you know, I don't think that's necessarily how it works. However, there is that for me, my takeaway at that in my, like part of my walk with Jesus is like, oh, God's desire is not hardship, it's abundance. He wants us to experience abundance, and that abundance can be found through trust. And so for me, that trust looked like giving when I wasn't exactly sure how it all was going to pan out.
But abundance is a mindset.
True.
Because for you, eating the same meal for weeks was abundant.
Free chili.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I wonder, I hear that God wants abundance for me. I wonder if this money thing is the same thing of what we talk about when we talk about like other distractions from our relationship with Jesus. So like if you're a slave to money or you're worshiping money or whatever, and that's taken, I mean, that takes up a lot of my brain space. It's like, that's the thing I'm worried about. That's the thing I'm thinking of how to do more of, how to get more in my life and be more stable. That's the thing that's like consuming.
Yeah.
A part of me that really, like, if I could free up that brain space, I could be doing more for the purposes of God or my relationship with him. And I wonder how much of that should matter too, where it's not just like he wants abundance for you, but also like he wants to be in relationship with you all the time and he wants you to worship him. And when you're worried about money and you're slave to it, you can't.
Right.
You can't do that.
Right. Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think that's why Jesus says you can't serve God and serve money. You're going to hate one and love the other. And the implication being, if you love money, if that's your focus, like your relationship with God will suffer. Like because the very basis of money, and this is what I was getting into with that whole concept of mammon, is like the word itself implies the thing in which you trust. And so if your relationship with money is that I trust money to take care of me, then by implication, you're not trusting God to take care of you.
Right.
It's like, according to the binary of Jesus in this, it's one or the other. Mm-hmm. Who do you trust, God or money? Because you can pick one. And that's a significant challenge for us. But if we remember who we are and remember ourselves as stewards, then by definition, we are trusting that God's going to take care of us as we take care of his stuff.
So how do we distinguish as Christians the difference between like building wealth or saving wisely and like hoarding? Like when does saving for the future become greed?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Is that going to be answered in this series or is that just like something we got to pray about?
I will be talking about it in the fourth week as we talk about wisdom to some degree. I'll have to. But what is so complicated for us is that we are, as I always say, like we are living in a culture that is at the most extreme of the most extreme of the most extreme of the human experience. Nobody in human history until us has ever been this hyper individualistic. Mm. And so literally even today in other cultures around the world, you go somewhere and nobody's as individualistic as we are. And what I mean by that is like when people get old in Kenya, the expectation, like it's not even a negotiable thing. They will be taken care of by their kids. That's how it works. They don't have retirement homes in Kenya because elders go and live with their family. And if their kids can't take care of them, then their kids' cousins will take care. It's like, it's just the expectation, but we don't have that. We are entirely dependent on our own savings to care for us or we're wards of the state. Like those are our options. And we don't really have a culture of people taking care of their parents like to the degree that other cultures do. So we are kind of stuck. And this is where wisdom is needed because we live in a culture that does actually depend on you saving for retirement. I don't believe, this is my personal opinion here, I don't believe it's wise to live in such a way that you're not preparing for the future. I think biblical wisdom would actually invite us to make sure we're taking care of ourselves so that we're not putting a burden on others to take care of us in a culture where that's not normal.
Yeah.
But this is, again, just my opinion.
Yeah.
I think this is where it gets really complicated. I do think, though, that the word abundance is a important one to define because there are plenty of Christians out there who have like a health and wealth gospel that's like God wants you to be wealthy. I'm not saying wealthy, I'm saying abundance, because abundance comes with the idea of overflowing and of sharing and of passing on. And if your pursuit of wealth does not lead to an overflowing into the lives of others, the sharing of that abundance, then it's a pursuit of wealth. It's not the pursuit of abundance. It's mammon. It's not the fruit of being God's steward. Does that make sense? I mean, do you agree with
absolutely.
Me on that?
Yeah. I just, whenever we have these conversations, it's so interesting to me because I almost come from the opposite of a background where it's like, God wants you to be poor.
Right. Right.
Like for real.
Yeah.
You can't outgive God. So give it all away and have nothing saved.
Yeah.
Because, you know, savings are wrong. Right. I mean, not a lot of people think that way. It just so happened I was around a lot of people who didn't think that way.
No,
but the principle is true.
Yeah.
If you are poor, but you can't share because God wants you to be poor, you know, the idea is to have abundance so that it can be spilling over and spreading life to the community around you and to others.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my whole journey with money, we can go into this in future podcasts, but like I came from personally from much more of a hardship mentality where I was like, after seeing the poverty that I saw in Kenya when I first lived there, and like I was paralyzed and couldn't do anything with my money. I remember vividly putting back a bunch of bananas at the grocery store because I was like, you know, I don't need these. I'll just eat peanut butter and bread. Like, because it was like voluntary hardship because I felt so guilty for having resources when others didn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't turn into abundance. It turned into some sort of weird, like self-punishing hardship. But that was the beginning of kind of my relationship with money as an adult. And so, yeah, I've come a long way to the point where now I see the necessity in a culture like ours of saving, not because you're trying to hoard wealth. I don't think there's a point at which it's too much. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be aware of that.
Yeah, my niece saw that this morning.
Oh, yeah, you've overdone it. I guarantee after what, a week of those four kids, it's probably all going to be eaten by that point.
All right. So what would we say to someone who feels trapped in a cycle of debt or financial stress, and they hear the concept of God owns it all and you're just a steward, you are a steward of this, mm-hmm. like, and that doesn't feel encouraging to them.
Sure.
That feels like, it's just one more thing failure. I have to think about.
Right, right.
What would we say to that person?
What would you guys say?
I don't know. I think it's a lot more work mentally to compartmentalize. I think it's a lot more freeing to say, okay, well then it's just all yours. To me, that is liberating. Mm. It's harder when I try to just like keep these areas of my life separate.
Right.
And I find it, again, liberating to think, okay, it's all yours.
I mean, it's a little bit, I haven't thought this all the way through yet, but as I say it out loud, maybe it'll make sense. It's like, okay, if God owns it all of the wealth, then he also owns the debt. Mm-hmm. It's his debt. Mm. What would he want you to do with his debt that you've acquired? Like, that's a big question. And yeah. I would imagine God would say, hey, let's deal with that debt and get to the point where you're no longer paying money that you don't need to be paying to banks that are going to just charge you interest rates. Like, let's work on that. And so for me, like, I know this is a massive problem for so many people. And we live in a world where the systems of greed and exploitation are such that the people who are most at risk of being exploited by high interest rates and debt are the people who don't have the resources to just solve their own problems. I would say it starts with a heart change, like we've been talking about, this willingness to say, okay, God, I'm going to go where you want me to go. But then it starts with the humility to say, and I need help. Mm-hmm. I can't just do this on my own. I need someone to walk with me, whether that's a peer financial coach or even just, I just need to go to that, the seminar thing, or whether it's like, I need to go to the care center and I need to get some of my grocery bills paid for so that I can put money towards my debt. Let me get care center groceries and then take whatever I saved, put that towards my debt so that I can get out of this cycle. Yeah. Like, that's the kind of thing that takes a lot of humility, a lot of trust. My question would be, all right, if it's God's debt to deal with, what does he want you to do with it? Mm-hmm. What does he want you to do next?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I think I would say, like, I think it's important for people to hear, whether you are somebody who is, what is it, secure in the margin sure. meter, or somebody who's on the opposite.
Right.
The
I think spectrum. Surplus is the top and then struggling is the okay. bottom of it. Yeah.
I think it's important to hear that no matter what end of the spectrum you're on, that your value is not that thing.
Totally.
That it's not your value.
Right.
And you said it earlier, like, God cares about you. And steward, to be a steward should feel like a blessing. It should not feel like a burden or a responsibility mm-hmm. to do these things. It should feel like a blessing. But God cares about you, and there's wisdom to be had no matter where you are in the margin meter. But your value is not that thing. Like, your value is not being in debt. That is not who right. you are. That's not right. your identity. That's not
yeah.
anything that has right. to do with value to God.
Right.
Same on the other side. Like, you being of means is not your value. God thinks of you and has blessed you.
Right.
But like, that is not your identity yeah. to
right.
God.
Right.
You are much more than that.
Right.
And I think, again, if God owns it all, if you are a person who is struggling, or if you are a person who feels you have less, or maybe has less, I feel like God would say, watch what I can do with it. Mm-hmm. If you entrust it into my hands, watch what I can do with it. An example from last week with the hurricane, my sisters put their resources together the day after, the waters had receded and it was time to start cooking for everybody. This is before the Mennonites showed up
yeah.
and rescued my sister from having to cook. So my sister does not love to cook. But my two sisters between them had 8 potatoes and 6 hamburger patties. Mm. And my sister said, all right, we're going to make a hamburger soup. And she fed 28 people mm. on 8 potatoes and 6 hamburger patties. I don't even know if I could do that.
Fishes and loaves.
Right. That was their version of the fishes and loaves story.
Well, we know you couldn't do it. You feed 4 people with 8 potatoes and 4 hamburger patties.
I'm going to be very convicted throughout this entire series. But no, it's God saying, put it in my hands and watch what I can do with it. Mm. I think sometimes when I have been in seasons of my life where I've worked 4 jobs to make ends meet. You know, we've never been a wealthy family. And sometimes, again, that scarcity mindset, for me at least, is like, well, Lord, I have so little. Mm. How can I? But even with my little, he said, well, watch what I can do with it if you put it in my hands, if you trust me with it.
I think it's weird. Maybe it's not weird, but we have to be taught this. Like it's like God created us to be this way. He created us so that we are the stewards, but also I got golf clubs for my 5-year-old and it's 30 seconds before he's like grinding it on the cement. You know, like we have to be taught
how to steward something
and that is a responsibility, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and part of the problem, this is a whole other podcast. Sorry, we don't need to talk about this, but part of the problem is also when we talk about money, if you're an ancient Israelite, what is your wealth? Your wealth is land, crops, animals, tools, clothing. Yeah. Like it's the physical, tangible things around you. Sometimes it's coins. Like that's your wealth. We have numbers on a screen somewhere.
Yeah.
That's our wealth. And it gets so disconnected from the real, tangible, physical world that it makes, again, we've got a lot set against us to learn how to be healthy with our money. Because we don't, how do you even conceptualize your wealth if all it is just numbers? I mean, how often do you check out at the grocery store or wherever and you saw the total amount and it went in one eye and out the other?
Sometimes you don't even look. you don't even look at it.
Yeah. You just pay whatever and you walk out. Like you don't have any physical relationship with what just left your bank account. So again, we've got our work cut out for us.
Yeah.
So where are we going next? What are we going to do?
Well, Maren, why don't you tell us? You're preaching.
We're talking about contentment.
Contentment.
Yep, that's what we're talking about. We sure will. Sorry.
So in other words,
you better rejoice.
You better rejoice. No, we'll be talking about contentment. We're going to talk about when Paul says he's learned to be content in all things, whether he is abased or whether he is abounding. He's learned the secret to how to be content, to what it means to be content.
Abased or abounding? That's got to be New King James.
You know, it's not NLT, that's for sure.
I'll tell you that much.
All right,
and
cool.
I promise I'll get a sermon written somehow.
It'll happen. I believe in
my
you.
My husband told me as he was leaving for work this morning, it'll take a miracle. Just with that many kids in the house.
Wow.
Jed said that?
Yeah. He's like, it'll take a miracle. Bye.
But I'm going to do it.
You got this.
You better rejoice.
If you want to sign up for one of the upcoming financial health workshops, you can do that at gracechurch.us/makingchange. Making Change is the name of the sermon series. It's gracechurch.us/makingchange if you want to sign up for one of these financial health workshops or the Bible study that we're offering. So please do that. We'll be back next week. Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do it. Do justly. Love mercy.
A little rusty.
And walk humbly with thy God.
Do it.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.